all scratched up and black as coal. Just living is bound to take its toll. We all take what we can hold and just a little more. Don't you cry for me. This is the life I chose, you see. I go to meet my destiny, wherever that might be, over on that other shore.
We saw it. Hey, this is Amanda Palmer and the Grand Theft Orchestra, and you're listening to WMFO, Mefod.
WMFO in Medford, 10:09 in the morning. I'm Mike. How you doing? Let me tell you what I played in that last set. And then we have a couple of guests here that we're going to get to talk to and hear from. Started off that set with new noise from the Just Imagines. That's called Peace, Love, and Harmony. And that was a song that was inspired by, it's a husband-wife duo. It was a dream that Carrie had, the wife, obviously, where she spoke with John Lennon. And that was what that was about. Then just before that, we heard The Sins from the great album Little Miss Lost. It was When We Were in Love. And yes, I think that if I have to pick, that's one of my favorites from that great record. Mike Younger had the third song of the set from 2006 record called Every Stone You Throw That Was Trouble Can Last. Mean Mary had the second song of the set. Her name is Mary, but I don't think she's mean. I think she's brilliant. 2013, she had a record called Year of the Sparrow that was Sweet Jezebel. And started off... just finished up with Linda Mandolin. I did that all wrong. I mixed up all the songs, and I did it in a different order because I'm verschluckenuch. You do know what that means, yeah.
I do.
All right, so Linda Mandolin, beautiful, beautiful rendition of a song, 1961 hit by the Paris Sisters. That was I Love How You Love Me, dedicated to the great Justine Kovalt, who we miss every day. All right, so as I love saying, I'm not alone in the studio. I've got a couple friends here, and you guys bring the microphones right up to your mouths. Well, not quite, but a little bit, so we can all hear you. Hi.
Hi. Hello.
That's Anne.
Hi, everybody.
Anne Hussick is the way that her name is pronounced, as we spoke about.
Mike Newman is the only person who pronounces my name correctly.
Yeah, that's because you pay me well, and I do what I'm told. Welcome. Nice to see you again.
You too.
Yeah.
Glad you had a good time in Florida.
I did, but I mean, what a crazy thing. I woke up yesterday, it was 81 degrees, and I fly back to this. Although you warned me.
I did.
Yeah, yeah.
Hope you have your winter coat.
I did. I packed it. And we have Interstate Johnson here. I'll call you by your actual name once. It's Mike, just because I want people to know that we're taking over, Mike's and there's nothing anybody can do rule. About it.
Mike's rule.
They do.
Here we come.
Look they out. Do. So you guys are just a part of, Anne, would you call it your band?
Well, I do the writing and, I would call it my band.
Yeah, Anne Husick and Exit 99, New York City.
Right. It was never Anne Husick and Exit 99. Somehow, when we put out the record, I was looking around and there are about 12 other bands called Exit 99. So I should have just called it Exit 99 NYC, but somehow on the record, it's Anne Husick and Exit 99. So.
All right. Well, I will say, dear listeners, I've done my research mostly on Anne for this. So, Mr. Interstate Johnson, I'll probably have questions for you saying, like, so when did this happen and how did you get involved in whatever? So, you know, I might do that. So, Anne, I know that you have made the comment that you've been doing this for a long time. You're a pro, you know, and you've said that you have golden ears, and you've always had golden ears.
I have golden ears.
So I have my idea of what that is. I mean, I would think it's sort of like when you listen to music, you know that that's quality stuff. And or maybe you can hear how the harmonies should be in your head and you could just make them happen. Am I right on the right track?
It's a little bit of both because I've always been, when I've heard songs, when they've just come out, when I was younger, I would go, oh, this one's going to be a big hit. Mm-hmm. For instance, Space Oddity. And my friends were all like, no way. And of course, we know what happened with that. Things like that. And also, I can learn songs very quickly. I can hear harmonies. So it's a golden ear in both ways.
Yeah, and I'll just say that you're somebody who's got the goods. I mean, you're good at this, you know. So you've got the goods, and as I sort of learned your history, it seems to me, and don't take this the wrong way, that as you progressed and you took every next step, you just sort of had to. You were in the right place, and it happened because you can do it.
Being in the right place at the right time,
it's everything.
Has everything to do with everything.
Yeah, I know. And the word luck is an interesting concept because it exists, but then again, it doesn't. But it does, though.
Right.
Yeah. Did that make any sense at all?
That totally made sense because I'm verschlummelt, too.
Yeah. Yeah, let's just do the Yiddish words. That'd be cool. You grew up in a musical house whereby at 6 a.m., it's 6 a.m., yeah. 6 years old, you started playing the piano.
Yes.
And that you took some lessons there, and that didn't really work out, did it?
It didn't work out because I hated reading music, so I would memorize my piano teacher playing the song, and I'd practice it all week, and he'd come back the next week and be like, that's wrong. And I'd be like, what do you mean that's wrong?
I did it exactly like you did.
So my parents allowed me to stop taking piano lessons.
And then maybe 3 years later when you were 9 or 10, picked up a guitar.
I picked up a guitar. My sister's friend gave guitar lessons. And I took lessons for about 6 months and then just kind of did everything else on my own.
What about it worked? Because you didn't have to read music. You could just make it work.
Right, because I have the golden ear. So people comment about the way I play my chords, and it's just what I hear in my head, and I figure out how to play them on the guitar, and I've done that since I was a kid.
Now, you've mentioned that your music teacher had a friend, but you didn't mention they were a member of Pure Prairie League. His brother.
Yes, the brother of my guitar teacher was in Pure Prairie League.
Yeah, so who remembers that band besides me? I grew up in the Absolutely. 70s.
Amy, that was their big hit.
Yeah, it's a great song. So he sort of, his approach was kind of like strummy, acoustic.
I don't know it was, but I wasn't learning Pure Prairie League songs.
Right, but I mean, but that you've said that you were kind of a strummy guitar player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a rhythm guitar player. I learned on acoustic. I was not like an electric lead guitar player, and I have actually since, because I've played lead in a bunch of songs, but I do a lot of things, so now I'm starting to give more of that responsibility to Interstate Johnson, because he can definitely do some of that way better than I can.
So you definitely categorize yourself as a rhythm guitarist.
I don't know about I guess I'm a guitar player. I don't walk in and say, hey, I'm a rhythm guitar player. But if I were to answer an ad on Craigslist and it said lead guitar, I wouldn't answer.
There you go. All right, point taken. So here's another example of how in your life when you made the next steps to the things that, you know, got you to where you are and to your dream of doing music. When you were in school in Queens, your teachers suggested that, you know, they knew that you were a musical person, and they said you should really go to a school that specializes
in that.
Tell us about that, because that's a huge turning point for you.
That's probably the only time that my teachers saw me. And
in high school?
No, in junior high school. And okay. And they said, you should apply for music and art, which I did, which was
You had to audition.
Yeah, I had to audition. I had debilitating stage fright till I was 21, so it was quite a nightmare.
Yeah, that's crazy, yeah.
And I was a vocal principal. And I did learn how to read music, and I'm really great at theory, but to me it's like math. It's not... I never use it in my compositions. I just go with my gut instincts because it's like math.
So what? Yeah. So you got a mind for math, right?
But, yes.
But being a vocal principal, that would mean that you would have to do like solos and stuff.
I got out of almost all of
what
them
is that
when
like?
I was in high school.
Then how did you have that? How were you a vocal principal?
Because I sang in the chorus.
Yeah, but they said, you know, you're going to do the solo, and you're like, no.
Yeah. Pretty much.
but you got over that.
I did get over it. When I was in college, I did a recording project with a couple of my friends. I went for music engineering to University of Miami.
Well, that's a science and math major.
Yes.
You probably didn't know that when you did that.
Found
out pretty quick.
I didn't, and I did, but now in the when you look online, it says this is a science and math program. So if you're just coming for music, don't do it. But anyway, I did great in math until I had a really lousy teacher. And then I was like, I can't get past this. And I dropped that major. But anyway, I spent a lot of time with these guys in the studio, like every Saturday and Sunday morning. And I just kind of stopped being nervous. And then I got into a band with my friends.
And this is at U of Miami now.
Yes. Yeah. And we all came back to New York after I dropped out. And I think some of them dropped out and some graduated. And we put together a band called Ground Control. We played at CBGB's, and their comment was, you're a hippie band, but we love you.
Jeez.
So we got to play there a lot. We did a lot of Fridays and Saturdays with fun bands.
Oh, you got to play Friday and Saturday nights?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they really liked us. And all the women there, they wanted me to give them guitar lessons, all the waitresses. It was very funny.
Mm-hmm. And you did do that for a while. You probably still do, right? Do guitar teaching?
I did not give them guitar lessons because I was like, what the hell do I know?
Mm-hmm.
But I did I did end up teaching at the New York City Guitar School for 13 years.
Mm. Well, that's a long tenure there.
Yeah, and I left to take care of my mom.
Okay.
Because she was living with us with her. She has Alzheimer's. And
That's tough.
Yeah.
So when and how did you sort of get into Band of Susans, your first really big band?
I got into Band of Susans because my best friend Jeffrey Notkin, who was my roommate, saw an ad in the Village Voice that said, guitarist wanted for touring and recording, no money.
really?
Which was very funny.
And you answered that ad because you wanted it so badly. Money, who needs money?
Who needs money? I was working at the Learning Annex with Paige Hamilton when he got into Band of Susans, which was two people before me. And I had already been aware of them, and I was a big fan. So Jeff, my roommate, when he saw the ad, he picked up the phone, and he called him and stuffed the phone in my hand. And I, along with 100 other New York City guitar players, auditioned. I was number two. And a year later, they called me back and asked me to audition again, along with 100 other guitar players, and I got in that time.
And is that the only time that you played, like, legit guitar in a band other than yours? Maybe not the other time. That's a wrong way to ask the question. You don't usually play guitar in bands.
I don't. I usually play bass when I'm.
But that happened after Band of Susans, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I didn't start playing bass till '96, and I got into Band of Susans in
'90. That's when it broke
90.
Up.
Yeah. And I bought Susan's bass. So my electric guitar was owned by Robert Paus from Band of Susans.
Okay.
And my bass was Robert's, and they're both G&Ls. Hi, G&L. We love you.
What's G&L?
It's a brand of guitar that Leo Fender made after he left Fender and Music Man. That was his last company. Band of Susans was great. But I played guitar with this girl, Jen Elliott, who had a few records out on City Canyon's records label that my friend Trevor Lloyd established. So I did that for, we wrote together for about 10 years, and I played a lot of guitar with her.
Okay. So then, as I mentioned, I'm just going to go through these bullet points, which are ridiculous bullet points, of what happened to you after that. As we established, you weren't playing guitar anymore. You were playing bass.
Well, I was... Oh, sorry.
Oh, good.
No, I was playing guitar.
But bass, really, in other people's bands.
Yeah, but I wasn't...
But you also were singing background, we should say that,
yes,
too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was doing a lot of singing.
And one of the things that happened there was when you had a magical connection, you said, that led you to Ronnie Spector.
Yes.
Yeah.
I played...
11 years, Anne.
11 years with Ronnie Spector.
God.
I played in a band with this woman, Trisha Scotti. She played bass in my band. I played bass in her band. And about a year after we were playing together, she came up to me one day and said, there's something I never told you. She goes, I've been playing with Ronnie Spector for the past year, and the other guitar player is leaving. The other singing guitar player, background vocalist, is leaving. And would you be interested in taking the gig? And I was like, yeah.
Right place, right time.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. So Ronnie came. I was running sound at Sidewalk Cafe in New York City, the home of Antifolk. And I was also had a gig that night. So her and her husband, Jonathan Greenfield, came out to see me play. And I got a call the next day or the day after saying, we'd love to have you in the band. And then our first gig was in Central Park, Bandshell, opening for Tommy James at the Shondells. So it was not a little gig. It was huge. And I was pretty nervous, but I played a lot of guitar in her band too. I played electric, acoustic, harmonica, percussion, and background vocals.
Dude,
I was like the, what do they call that? What's this?
Castanets.
I played castanets, but that's during the percussion.
I'm a gesticulator too, and it doesn't work on the radio. I'm gonna say this sentence here, and I don't believe it. You sung with Ronnie, and you also sang with Joey Ramone.
I did sing with Joey Ramone because Joey Ramone would come and do shows with Ronnie because they did a record together before I got into the band, and I was very lucky. Joey was a really, really nice human being, really supportive of everybody. I'd go to Continental, my friend Trigger's club, and there would be kids there like pointing at Joey going, oh my God, it's Joey Ramone. So I'd walk over to them and go say hello to him. He'd love to talk to you.
Yeah,
and
right.
They'd be like, really? I'd be like, yeah, you know, don't be shy.
Mm.
But
amazing.
Yeah.
So then you got led to a bunch of other amazing things, like appearing, you know, on national television shows and stuff, because you met a guy named John Tiven.
I did meet John Tiven.
And that led you to Wilson Pickett.
Yes, I did sing with Wilson Pickett for a while. That was quite a quite an experience.
I would say so.
Singing with Wilson Pickett and his entourage.
You did some very high-profile stuff. I mean, David Letterman,
mm-hmm.
right? And you got to be in a movie.
David, I did.
Is it D.A. Pennebaker's movie?
D.A. Pennebaker did a movie called Souls, Only the Strong Survive.
And why were you wearing a brown skirt?
Oh, my God. Because, shit.
Ooh!
The cardinal rule. I broke the cardinal rule. Sorry.
They'll be here to haul you away in a second.
Okay. Yeah, because I don't wear skirts a whole lot, and I wore pants on the David Letterman show, and the recording at Irving Plaza for the movie was the next day, and I did not have time to go get a skirt, so I had to wear the brown skirt, and it's kind of embarrassing.
All these years that you remember that and mention it, it's like really funny.
It's really funny, but if you watch that clip, she's wearing a brown skirt, you know.
Okay. So then, if that wasn't enough, I mean, you got somebody mentioned to you that, or you overheard, I guess, that a sub was needed for a bass player for Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yes, somebody in Jeremy Chatsky, who was the bass player in Ronnie Spector's band. He's a fantastic musician. And he was on the phone when we were in the van going to Rockaway Playland to play there.
You overheard it.
And I overheard it, and I said, I'll do it.
There you go.
So again, I had to audition along with 100 other New York bass players, and I got the gig.
Once again, you got the gig.
Yeah.
Yep. So this was off-Broadway, right?
It was off-Broadway. And through that, I ended up going to Chicago.
Awesome.
And doing the play there. And it was such a beautiful play. And I didn't really get it until I did it in Chicago. And then it all sort of made sense to me. Mm-hmm. And it's just such a beautiful story.
It's kind of a perfect show for you because the band is like central in it.
The band is on stage the whole time. But that also is one of the reasons that I knew I couldn't do it forever,
right,
because
yeah.
I'm standing on stage going, oh my God, I'm just standing here.
I'm in a brown skirt.
No brown skirts.
I'm sorry to even speak the words again. I'm sorry.
No, I was allowed to wear pants when I was in Hedwig.
All right. So you're doing all this stuff, and you were teaching guitar. Mm-hmm. And while teaching guitar, you had to sing over all these people.
Yes.
And this is the first thing I've said that something bad happened to you. You lost your voice.
I lost my voice for about 6 years.
Could not sing.
I couldn't sing.
No.
There were notes in my range that just weren't happening. I never went to an ENT because I'm pretty sure I never would have allowed them to do any operations on my throat. So
right.
One day I woke up.
6 years later.
And I could sing a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And your voice is different now.
It's different, and it took me quite some time to figure out how to use it, but my voice was more of a background vocal voice before that because I could always blend really well. And now I can do some background vocals, but it's much more of kind of a lead vocal voice now because it's more quirky and has a lot more to what I think is personality.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm real happy with the way it's got
some vibrato to it.
Yes, which I didn't have before. But I also have something called an essential tremor. So I could not be a surgeon. So I think that might be what affects my voice a little bit.
Yeah.
But also, you know, after singing with Ronnie Spector for 11 years, you know, you get kind of vibratish.
Yeah.
But I did not use vibrato in her when I sang with her. My voice was just straight, pure tones.
I mean, you got to tour all over the place, this country, UK.
All over Europe.
You've been
a lot of Europe.
Yeah.
A lot of Europe. Germany, Austria, Denmark, Sweden.
What a life.
Oh, yeah. What a life.
No, I mean, it's pretty fun. You got to do what you love.
I have a lot of good memories.
And some things you don't remember, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe there's a lot that I don't remember because, you know.
Yeah, I do know.
Yeah.
Sorry, so jumping up to like 2017, you're finally getting to do something you hadn't really, which is have your own band.
I had my own band.
There were some other smaller ones, but this one, Exit 99.
I just did more with it. I actually put out a record. What's Phil's record company?
Quartz.
No.
Oh, Phil.
Yeah. I put out a record in 2016, sort of right when I got my voice back.
And it was your band, your project?
I didn't have a band.
Yeah, okay.
So it was my project. And my voice wasn't really fully back then, and I did not produce it. So there's a couple of songs on there that I absolutely love and a bunch of stuff that I don't really care to listen to so much anymore. And I am re-recording some of those songs.
Cool. So this is why this band is different, because
yes,
it's all you.
It's
That's what
band.
I was trying to get at.
Yeah, yeah.
And I failed miserably.
No, you didn't.
All right.
Yeah, so I produced Master Plan and I love it.
But it took a while, Anne, because you couldn't get out of your own way, right? I mean, you're like, I'm a procrastinator. I mean, if you look it up in the dictionary, there's my picture.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I am. But it finally did get done from a new friend of mine and a friend of yours for a long time. Talk about her a little bit.
Who, Cindy?
No, Roxanne Fontana.
Oh, Roxanne Fontana.
Yeah.
You know what? The record would have come out without Roxanne Fontana, but I was like, let me be on a little record label.
Right, she had
anyway,
a little label.
I've known Roxanne Fontana since 1996, and I actually used to play music with her, and I'm on a couple of her records, one produced by Dino Danelli and from the Young Rascals, and then another one. And so when I was getting ready to put out the record, I hadn't quite finished it, and I was like, you know, Roxanne, do you want to put this out on your label? So we discussed it, and what that meant is that her label imprint is on my record. That's about, and she did like a little bit of business stuff behind the scenes for me, but she didn't really have anything to do with doing it. But what it did was it gave me a deadline. She's like,
yes,
because she's an astrologer, so she's like, we got to put this out in April.
Yeah, because so otherwise like, the stars are going to be in retrograde.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
And I probably still wouldn't be finished.
Uh-huh.
But we finished it and got it out, and it's. You know, I paid one of those record promoter guys to get it out there, and it actually, you know, people like it. So that made me super happy.
Yeah, it's really got a cool vibe to it. How do you feel about playing a couple of songs?
Sure.
All right.
What, so you want to play them on the radio?
I could do it either way.
Yeah, play one of those first.
All right. So. I want to play two songs, actually, from this record. And the first one I want to do, I keep losing my mic over here, is Whoa Yeah. Talk a little bit about Whoa Yeah, because that's like the first song, besides the title track, Master Plan, that I heard. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I really like that.
Okay, well, this is Interstate Johnson's favorite song on the record, I think.
It's because his name is really Mike, that's why.
It was about deciding to leave a band that I had been in that I absolutely adored, but just time came to walk out the door. So it was about making that decision.
Okay. A song that I guess chronicles something that happened to you. That was a harrowing experience. It's called Gun.
Yes. That was quite a harrowing experience. I went to a party for my friend Rue, and I was playing in five bands that night, including Dave U Hall's band. This was many years.
What a great guy.
Yeah. I was playing bass. I guess he played guitar, just sang that night. So I couldn't leave, and there was a woman there who will remain nameless who followed me around all night, screaming in my ear, "You're a musical bully." What?
Yeah.
She was elbowing me. She came up on stage and knocked me over. And a couple of friends of ours who will also remain nameless, I asked them to intervene. And they said, we can't do anything about it. And I called the guy the P word from the stage, because that's what he was. And finally, when I was getting ready to leave, I was getting a ride home from my friend Joe, and I told him what happened. He goes, that didn't happen, except she followed me up the stairs, and he was like, oh my God, I can't believe she's doing that to you.
That's so, such a scary thing.
And if she had had a gun that night, I wouldn't be sitting here right now.
That's what that song's all about. All right, so let's hear Whoa Yeah and then Gun, and we'll be back after this. And I'm going to convince you to play a couple songs live.
Okay, I think because
I'm very convincing. All right, this is Whoa Yeah from Ann Hussick and Exit 99 at WMFO.
Changes all thoughts in a twirl, and I'm not sure, don't know where I'll end up. I've never been afraid of change when I feel my soul rearranging the story of my life. Do I say goodbye? Do I stay and cry? I stare at the future in the eye. Should I say hello? Is it time to go? The answer changes.
WMFO Medford, 10:45, just about in the morning. All right, let's just talk about that trumpet solo. That was crazy.
That trumpet solo is played by the great Mac Gholahan, who has played with Bowie and the Stones, and he's one of those guys that just loves to play. So he plays with everybody. He slums it. He'll play for three people. He has 90 bands, and he plays these huge shows also. So we were in the studio, and he did a few takes, and I was like, oh, Mac is not on his game today.
Uh-oh.
And then I was like, can you just try it one more time? And that's what we got. And I could feel it, like, just pulling at my solar plexus and just pulling me around in
my soul.
It's
those golden ears,
right? Oh, my God. And I cried when he did that, and then we were all just... When he got done, we all just kind of looked at each other and nodded.
It just makes that song. It's just, yeah. All right, so you guys are going to play live, and this is Philosophy, and I know that you've said that this is the only protest song you've ever written.
It is a protest song. I was talking to the great Danny Ray, the sax player, who was supposed to play on that record, but he had something else to do that day. We were talking about the food industry, actually, which is why it ends the way it does, but it is really apropos to pretty much everything that's going on in our nation now.
Lots of stuff. All right. This is Ann and Interstate Johnson live in Studio A. This is Philosophy at WMFO.
There's a crisis here. The world is changing fast. Innocence has slipped into the past. Power gains, the human toast. Losing ground, soon we'll be into. Too late. Mistakes reversible. Somebody sound the horn. Wow. It's not a matter of philosophy. It's down to earth, yeah, it's reality. They're jeopardizing our serenity, liberty, messing with our harmony.
Come on now. Boy, you know, at 10:49 in the morning, you guys. You guys just had it going on like it's like 8 o'clock at night and you're on a gig. That was great. That was awesome.
Thank you.
All right, so you guys heard that. Listen, these guys are playing live on Sunday at the Worthen Attic in Lowell. Show starts at 4. You're playing along with...
We're doing our full band. Oh, sorry. The other bands.
Yeah.
The other bands are our friends from New York, Density Black Hat.
Yep.
With Dennis Doyle, Don Stabnick, and Gas Wild.
Yeah.
And we're also playing with Girl with a
Hawk. And they're doing acoustic.
They're just doing an acoustic thing, but I've heard it, and it's delightful.
Oh, yeah.
So come on out. My band, I would just like to mention some names, is Interstate Johnson on lead guitar.
Yeah.
My wonderful magician of a bass player, Stu Chicken Leg Richards.
Mm-hmm.
And my very... creative drummer Roger Stoltz.
So listen,
I love those guys.
You guys out there listening on the radio, you heard that was just, you know, two of them playing guitars here acoustically early in the morning. You don't know what everybody went through yesterday to get here. I mean, they're driving from Queens, I'm flying back, and you come here and do that. Wow. Again, tomorrow, 4 o'clock, the Worthen Attic. And I know Dan wants to say something, but we don't have a lot of, is there anything else we should say about it? Or because we can't really.
You've got it pretty much covered.
All right. All right. So,
this is the last show.
And it's the last show at the Worthen Attic for the year. It's just $10 at the door. And you get three excellent bands and an excellent venue. So, so let's end with we picked a bunch of songs and we have time for like two. One of them you picked was, of course, by the Beatles, because of course you did.
Right.
Everybody I talk to when I talk about influences and stuff, it's the Beatles. And you picked Hey Jude, which is like the longest song you could have picked.
Right.
But we'll fade out the na-nas.
Right.
And then we're going to play another one by the Sins. Woman Child and the Sins is one of those bands, when they need a bass player to sub, that's what you do.
Well, actually, I was in the band for about 3 years. From maybe 2016 to 2019.
Playing bass.
I was the bass player. And then due to circumstances, you know, I was very busy. I relinquished my role. Mm. And now I am their number one sub for their great bass player, Dave Uhall, who I mentioned before.
Yep.
Okay, so you're going to do Hey Jude first?
Yep, and then we'll come back with Woman Child.
All right. Hey Jude, I saw Paul McCartney at the Barclay Center, and I'm telling you, I was like all the way in the back, and when he did the na-na-nas and I sang with him, I was like, I'm singing with Paul McCartney, and I was bawling my eyes out, and I'm gonna cry now. It was like a really moving moment.
See, this is somebody who is doing what she should be doing. Listen to what music does to you. There's nothing like it. All right.
Hey Jude,
it's Beatles, everybody.
Don't make it bad. Take a sad song and make it better. Remember to let her into your heart. Then you can start to make it better. Hey Jude, don't be afraid. You were made to go out and get her. The minute you let her under your skin, then you begin to make it better. And anytime you feel the pain, now
man, did that song have to end? That was a Sins and Woman Child.
I
and heard the Beatles
that.
Before that. Hey Jude. I want to thank you guys and Interstate. Thank you so much for coming in, talking all about your great musical life and playing that inspired song. That was great. You got to come back and do it again.